on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. Today, host Rebecca Hamilton will be talking with Edna Hardin, President, and Keith Brown Ill, Vice President of Missouri Citizens United for the Rehabilitation of Errants, about Missouri Cures' statewide conference to be held here in Kansas City next weekend. They will be joined by Reverend Esther Holzendorf, the featured speaker for the conference. In the second half of the show, we will open the phone lines for your questions and comments. Have your pencils and paper ready for our calendar in the middle of the show. And don't forget the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Up next is Rebecca and her guest.
Well, good morning. My name is Rebecca Hamilton, and I have with me here in the studio Keith Brown Ill, who is one of the leadership individuals for Missouri Cure. We will also have a couple other representatives of Missouri Cure. And Keith, I want to start off with just asking you, what is Missouri Cure?
Missouri Cure is a prison reform organization who tries to assist prisoners with difficulties that they run into while serving their sentences. And we try to assist their families in securing the rights of the people who are in prison. We frequently run into situations where we have flagrant violations and abuses of prisoners' rights and mistreatment, and we need to have those things resolved.
Very good. I believe we also have Heidi Hardin on the line with us. Are you there, Heidi?
It's Hedy.
Hedy,
my name is Edna, but I go by Hedy.
Okay.
And, yeah, hi.
Hi.
And I'm glad to be here.
Yes, tell us about how you became involved with Missouri Cure, please.
Back in 1989, I took a tour, a citizens investigative tour of Missouri State Penitentiary, and it was shortly after that that Missouri Cure started. CURE was a national organization that started in Texas in 1972 when a former priest and a former nun, Charlie and Pauline Sullivan, were protesting the Vietnam War, and they were supporting hunger strikers at a county jail and ended up getting arrested. And then they were in D.C. During the peace march against the war in Vietnam and got arrested along with 15,000 other people. And then later that year, Attica broke out, and they decided to devote their lives to prison reform. So Texas Cure started in 72, and then in 85 they moved to Washington, D.C. and started Cure as a national organization. And Charlie started traveling around the country to help get other chapters started. So in 1990 he came to St. Louis, and CURE began in Missouri with me as chair. So it's been going for 24 years now.
And what about the CURE organization excites your passion? What is it about this cause that gets you excited?
I've always had a feeling for people in prison. It just seems like that's the loneliest thing in the world, to be locked up behind bars. And the more I found out about the prison system, the more I wanted to be involved. And I also was an activist in other causes since 1974, and actually worked with prisoners at Marion, Illinois, federal prison back then. So I have a history of it. But when I found CURE, I saw it as a vehicle to do what I wanted to do to help, you know, the prison struggle.
All
so
right.
That was how I got involved with CURE.
Thank you. Keith, could you give us an idea of what brought you to CURE and what brings out your passion about this cause?
Well, first of all, I've spent 36 years out of my life in prison. and I guess I was what you could call a prison activist during those years. If you have any kind of sanity, you can't help but be a prison activist if you're confined and living under the conditions that you have to contend with on a daily basis. And I met Hetty while I was incarcerated, and we used to correspond and exchange ideas about things. I wrote various articles for the Cure newsletter. I never thought it, you know, that it would come a time when I end up being the vice chairman of Cure, but we were able to get in touch with each other years later after I was released. And I felt it was an organization that needed my support, you know, so I got involved.
What kind of activism did you have while you were in prison, and what were the consequences of that to you?
Well, there's always consequences anytime you are any kind of activist in prison. I mean, if you're just advocating or having salt and pepper on the table, they take offense to that because prison is a very territorial environment. And, you know, the prison officials, they try hard to impress upon your mind that we run this institution or we run the system and everything is going to go how we say it's going to go. And if you got a problem with that, then, you know, we can lock you up. We can beat you up. We can charge you with a crime. Have you prosecuted in court? We can have your parole denied. They have various mechanisms. Too many mechanisms that they can use to try to discourage people, which is why you don't have a lot of prison activists. And I just simply came to the conclusion that I thought at the time that I was in prison, I was like, hey, I'm going to be here anyway. I don't care what I do. I didn't see them letting a whole lot of people out of prison, you know, whether their behavior was good or not. So I said, well, if I'm going to be here, I might as well be doing something worthwhile. And I refuse to live the way I'm being dictated to. So
what was maybe the most egregious thing that you observed that you felt needed attention, needed to be acted upon?
The attitude that prison officials have towards prisoners and the lies that they tell the society to try to get them to condone their behavior, their treatment of prisoners. You know, unfortunately, you do have some people in prison who are there for very heinous crimes, you know, but most of the people who are in prison, they are there simply because they were trying to survive. You know, and if they had had other choices, they probably wouldn't have made the choice that ended up getting them in the situation that they were in that resulted in them being in prison. And there's something about this society that they feel that they always have to have somebody to look down on to show the rest of the people who are not being treated the way they should be that, well, at least you're not in that situation. You know, at least you're not a criminal. At least you're not that. And unfortunately, a lot of times society, they join in with this mentality that, you know, those people there, they deserve the type of treatment. Some of the things that they do to people in prison, nobody on this planet deserves to be treated like that.
Can you give us, an example that comes to mind to you?
A young kid being thrown in the prison cell with an older guy like me or some of the prison guards winking at him as they lock the doors, letting him know, you know, mm-hmm. this is here's your prize, you know, for whatever, the double selling situation is a nightmare within itself. I mean, you have people that have 4 and 5 room houses and they can't get along living in those houses together, but they want to take 2 men that don't know each other, don't like each other, and then they want to throw them in the cell together and tell them, you better get along. And, you know, I've heard people beating on the doors at night, hollering and screaming, or even in the daytime, trying to get out of cells with people because they were trying to avoid a problem or some kind of problem had developed, and the guards walk off and like, or try to pretend that they don't hear. There's a considerable amount of violence that goes on in prison that there are times when these things are about to occur and the prison officials, they know about it and they don't try to do anything.
What happens if you try to bring these matters to their attention? Do you get any response or what happens?
you do the Harry Houdini or the Harry Blackstone, you disappear. You go to segregation. You know, you go to another institution. You may possibly be charged with some type of felony offense, you know, while you being handcuffed and, you know, the guard he snatches your arm in the wrong way and you accidentally elbow him in the jaw or something, and then you get charged with an assault. You know, they have various ways.
And wait just a minute, Keith. You're talking about the victim now, not the perpetrator of an assault, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you experience those kinds of retaliation when you were incarcerated?
Oh, yeah, I did. And, you know, I had my methods of what I consider to be retaliation as well, you know. And you know, I was, in most cases, I was able to, you know, after a period of time when I demonstrated that I was going to allow myself to be intimidated by the tactics that were being used, I came to be known as a person where they felt like, okay, he's better off just being left alone, leave him alone. Because I tried to incite riots, I tried to incite protests, all type of stuff. And I was like, you know, you're not going to come here every day and make my life miserable and then think you're going to go home and have a good night's sleep. I'm not having that. You know, so, you know, I paid, and it was prices I had to pay.
Mm.
You know, like everybody else. But, you know, like everybody's not cut out to be a prison activist, so... Mm.
And so now you're channeling that energy into helping the families and friends of people who are now incarcerated in the Missouri system, as well as trying to make things better for those who are incarcerated.
Yes, I have devoted my life to this particular aspect of the struggle. I mean, there's many struggles that need to be fought as well as out here on the street. I'm saying there's quite a bit of abuse of authority taking place out here on the street, but one of the things that I'm committed to is devoting my life to drawing attention to the conditions that people have to live. I mean, because you've got some people. I had the comfort of knowing all along while I was in prison that it was going to come a time when one day I would get out. You have people in prison now that are serving life and no parole. They're serving 85%, which can amount to being a life sentence where you'll never make parole if you have a considerable amount of time, you know, and to get up every morning and have to tell yourself that I'm never going to see the streets again and this is what I have to endure, you know, I it's unbearable.
We have another guest here with us in the studio. This is Reverend Esther Heisendorf?
Holzendorf. Good morning.
Glad to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Tell us what your connection is and what about Missouri Cure speaks to you and your passion.
I have been involved with Cure since back in the 80s. I was originally involved with Oklahoma Cure. I am retired from the Oklahoma Department of Corrections, and so I became involved with Cure because I saw CURE as a organization that we as staff members could actually work with to bring about some of the necessary reforms that was needed in prisons. Back in the early days, the 70s and 80s, that was the beginning of what's called the drug war. They had all kinds of wars going on, war on violence, war on poverty, war on crime, but it was always a war on people. That's the way we saw it. And I was blessed at that time to be working with a group of people who felt that we could be a catalyst, we could be a vehicle for change that was much needed. And so that's how I became involved with CURE. It was through the Oklahoma CURE.
Now, you said you were a staff member there. What was your involvement, and how did you recognize so early that these things that were being described as a war on drugs or war on poverty were in some ways a war on people?
Actually, my life is kind of it's a continuation of a lot of things. I started in the Department of Social Services, Children's Division, and I saw some abuses, and not necessarily from the clients. I saw system abuses occurring. In as much as people did not have access to needed services. And a lot of times failure is based on lack of access. So that really is what started me to think. And then I found myself in Oklahoma working for the Department of Corrections, and I began to connect some dots. I said, I see what's happening here. One system is feeding another. It's parasitic. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about the abuses in prison, but the abuses don't just start when a person gets to prison.
Right.
Nobody wakes up one morning and decides, okay, today I think I'll just go and be an inmate, you know. A lot of things happen to people. They get them on this road, on this path, and it is deliberate. And when I use the word parasitic, I mean parasitic. The people who are in prison often are victims themselves of another system or systems. And so I think society needs to come to grips with the fact that there needs to be some societal reforms. We need some changes in laws. We had the conditional release laws, and we had the 9 month on 12 month sentences, then we had the changes, the 85%, and then we went to life without the possibility of parole, and then the hard 50. So there's been many, many changes over the years, but it hasn't been to benefit the people. Although people believe that you lock folks up and you get rid of crime. Well, it seems to me common sense would tell us that is just not so. Because if that was all it was going to take to get rid of crime, then why do we have so much crime?
Right. And I think a lot of people kind of have the out of sight, out of mind. You know, they see, oh, this guy got this sentence and now he's a non-entity, or he or she. And the reality is they're coming back to the community. Eventually, most of them. And so will they be a better neighbor when they get back, or not as good a neighbor? And so the whole system has to be looked at and examined, not just the prison system as well.
Exactly. And also, society is going to have to get past this thought that everybody that goes to prison is just horrible people. No, they're not. And I want to say that. I'm not an expert, but having spent enough time in prisons to retire from prisons, I think I got a little bit of an idea of what people are really all about, and to some extent anyway. And they're human beings. And as a manager in the Department of Corrections, one of the things I always tried to do, well, not just me, but the staff, and working with the staff to train, it was a lot of changes in mindsets that had to occur. But I always tried to send forth the message, treat people like you want to be treated, and you set the standard. You set the standard. You do not abuse people. And if they have something coming, make sure they get it. If it's mail, medicine, books to read or whatever, make sure they get it. Let's think outside the box. Let's figure out ways where we can get people out of these cells and outside doing something that is of interest to them. We had young people who, they love to plant flowers and things. So we figured out a way to work with some the business community. That meant getting out and talking to businesses, but bringing the businesses inside to help to understand and to work with the incarcerated citizens. And I refuse to call them convicts or inmates or offenders or whatever. They're incarcerated citizens. And we'd bring the businesses inside and work together, and that is for the betterment of everybody, to include it. It cut down on misconduct, you know, people trying to run off and that sort of thing. So I think if people just stop and think about what they're doing when they're running prisons, that is an excellent place for people to allow folks to change.
Very good. I want to move into something exciting that's coming up for all of our guests here this next Saturday. It's my understanding there's going to be a conference here in Kansas City. I believe it's going to be located at St. Mark's Union Church at 11th and Euclid, and it's free. And who are you inviting to this? Maybe Keith, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the conference and who's invited and what kind of things are going to be talked about.
Well, we have a whole list of people that we have invited. We invited Governor Nixon, for one, which we don't anticipate to show up. We invited the Attorney General, Chris Costner. We invited all the senators, state representatives, Department of Corrections officials, including the director, George Lombardi. We invited all the institutional prison wardens, and we are inviting all other community activists and agents for change, prison reform groups invited, human rights organizations, churches. We have a list of mothers incarcerated, of incarcerated sons and daughters, Missouri Association for Social Welfare, Industrial Workers of the World, American Civil Liberties Union, Public Interest Litigation, and we just have a list of people.
Goes on and on.
Goes on and on and on. We are trying to get everybody involved in this process, because this problem that we have is a major catastrophe. You know, the people that you have running these prisons now, they don't have a clue about how to go about treating people like human beings. And we feel like it is essential for people to feel that they have people who are incarcerated or have a interest in being regarded as human beings and being treated properly, so they can come out of prison in the right state of mind. If you come out of prison thinking that the whole world is against you because you made a mistake and you went to prison, this is the way you're going to behave when you get out. Mm-hmm. You know, now you can control a person's behavior up to a certain point when you have them incarcerated, and a lot of times you're not even able to do that even when you have them incarcerated. When you continuously put this idea in your mind that nobody cares about you and we can do whatever we want to do to you, eventually somebody is going to rebel. Mm-hmm. We don't want these people getting out of prison rebelling out here and snapping out in society, giving other people who are still trying to get out of prison a bad name.
Right.
We don't want other people being injured. We don't want them getting on. We don't want to see people's pictures plastered all over the news papers and the media, using them as poster boys and examples of why you don't let people out of prison.
Right.
You know, we cannot continue to have this pace that we have going on of just locking everybody up that creates a problem, trying to criminalize everything. You know, we don't have the capacity for that.
Right. So you're trying to change the outcome. You want them to be successful on their release for their benefit and for the community's benefit and for their families' benefit.
I want them to have a chance first of all, I want them to have a chance to be released.
Right.
And second of all, once they are released, we want them to have a chance to be successful out here in society, where to the extent where they don't have to do something that will end up resulting in them being back in prison.
So, Heidi, could you tell us some of the services that are not directed toward former incarcerated citizens, but to their families and friends through your organization?
Okay. Again, it's Heidi.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. But we are not a service organization. We are an advocacy organization. So we advocate for legislation. We have sponsored bills to try to change the 85%. We work with families of prisoners. We work with prison organizations such as NAACP groups, and we go to prisons and correspond with prisoners. Prisoners are our members, actually. It only costs them $2 a year to be a member of CURE. We have a quarterly newsletter that they really look forward to getting, because it gives them a lot of good information. So really, our mission statement says that we believe that prison should be only for those who must be incarcerated, and that prisoners should have all the resources needed to turn their lives around. So this is what we advocate for.
All right. Who are you inviting as far as the general public, in addition to the individuals that Keith mentioned? Who else is invited? Who would benefit from this conference?
Well, it's open to everyone, but primarily we're looking at family members of incarcerated people. These are the people that we serve. These are the people that, in fact, we are grassroots, so most of us ourselves have loved ones in prison.
And what would they learn, or how would they benefit from going to the conference? How can you help them?
Well, there's two things. One, in the morning we're going to have speeches. We're hoping to inspire people and educate people. and get them involved. And then in the afternoon, after lunch, we're going to have workshops. In fact, we've got 8 workshops scheduled. And they're all on very important topics that that people need to deal with, because there are things that people are suffering with in prison. For example, one of the most important workshops, and Keith is going to lead this one, is on abuses and human rights abuses in prison. Then we're going to have one on health and medical issues. We're going to have one on legislation, especially mandatory minimum sentences, such as the 85% and life without parole. We're going to have one on parole issues, another on reentry. We're going to have one on the death penalty, and one on sex offenders in the registry. And finally, we're going to have one on legalization of marijuana.
All right. We're going to pause for a moment for our Jaws of Justice calendar and some announcements. Please stay with us.
Now, the calendar for September 22, 2014. Grassroots Organizing, GRO, will be hosting ACLU attorney Dan Veets for a community dialogue about Know Your Rights, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., Thursday, September 25th, at the GRO Outreach Office, 611 North Garth Avenue, Columbia, Missouri. Come learn how to protect your rights from traffic stops to discrimination in housing, the workplace, and at protests, and more. For more information, call 573-443-4476 or 573-581-9595. Human rights, civil rights, and religious groups and other activists across the nation are coming together to make October a month of resistance to mass incarceration, police terror, repression, and the criminalization of a generation. October 22nd is the 19th annual National Day of Protest. There are calls for various activities during October, including asking the clergy to speak from the pulpit on these issues, artists to express their outrage with their art, panels and symposiums in communities and schools, and No More Deportations Day on October 13th. To find out more and how you can plan an activity here in Kansas City, go to www.stopmassincarceration.net. My name is Jeff Humfeld. These events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website. That's kkfi.org.
Welcome back to Jaws of Justice. This is Rebecca Hamilton. I have with me several members of Missouri Cure. With me here in the studio is Keith Brownell, and he is, I believe, the vice chairman of the organization. We also have Reverend Esther Hosendorf. She comes from the Department of Corrections in Oklahoma and now is an active member in fighting for prisoner rights and their families. We also have with us Hetty Harden, who is with us via St. Louis, who I believe is the chairperson of the organization. We have decided to let any of our listeners that would like to comment or have questions for any of our guests to call the studio. The number is 816-931-5534. So if you have a question or a comment for any of our guests, please give us a call at 816-931-5534. I wanted to maybe delve into some of the specific issues that are going to be discussed at the conference. Keith, I know that you mentioned earlier in a discussion that you're going to have something that you're calling the 10 Most Wanted. Do you want to tell us what you're drawing attention to with that issue?
We have selected what we feel like are 10 of the most egregious cases of people being incarcerated while when they were convicted. Some of the people on this list, they're on there because of the fact that they have been serious medical needs that are being neglected, and the state doesn't seem to want to address these medical problems that these people have.
What kind of medical needs are you talking about?
Amputation of limbs or terminal illnesses that could be terminal if they don't receive the proper treatment, things of this nature. And we just feel like if you don't want to spend the money, you don't want to give these people the care that they need, then you should let them out. This is stated in almost plain terms in the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution, and various courts have ruled that prison officials are required to give people adequate medical treatment.
In other words, failure to give adequate medical treatment constitutes cruel and unusual punishment.
Exactly. And courts have said this, that you cannot leave people in prison and refuse to give them adequate medical care because it amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. The third category that we have on the 10 Most Wanted list is people who have been thoroughly rehabilitated. They have gone through every program that they have in the Missouri penal system. They have gone beyond what the Department of Corrections requires. As far as rehabilitation is concerned, he's taking extracurricular courses and things of this nature. If these people go through these rehabilitation programs and you don't want to let them out, then you should stop asking the public for all this tax money that you're asking for to rehabilitate them, because apparently it's not being used for the purpose that it's being asked for. You have people who go up to the parole board and they petition the board for their release, and they tell them, they say, look, I've done everything I can do. What else do I need to do to that would require my release? The parole board is sitting up there scratching their head. Well, we don't know. Why would you have a person go through all that if you don't, if it don't mean anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are, and these, we want to emphasize that the people who are on this list, we're not just advocating for them. We're advocating for them. You have hundreds of people in the Department of Corrections, possibly thousands of them, who are in one of these three type of predicaments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the prison officials and the parole board, they don't want to let these people out because that means every time you let a person out the door, then there goes some money that you can possibly ask for it at the next legislative session.
Right.
You know, the average person that was serving a life sentence maybe 10 or 20 years, well, 10 years ago, they was keeping them locked up maybe 15 years. Now they're keeping them locked up 30 years because they've had to release more people. You know,
And the standard reason given for denial of parole is due to the seriousness of the crime, which can never change.
Right.
So that's one of the big problems is the parole board itself, the secrecy and just the whole injustice of it. I'm sorry, Keith, for interrupting.
No, go ahead. I'm fine.
Hi, Eddie. This is Vester.
Hi.
We haven't said anything about the prison industrial complex, and it's interesting what Keith is saying. But there are solutions to every problem. I don't care what it is. And anything human beings create, we can do something about. We created this system. But we have to, talk about the elephant in the room that nobody really wants to address, seemingly. And that is classism.
Yes.
Racism is certainly a part of it, but classism is a big cause for a lot of these issues. I was doing some research when y'all asked me to be your speaker at your conference, and I was looking at a book by Dr. Boyce Watkins, and it's entitled The Eight Principles of Black Male Empowerment. and it talks about the increase in urban violence, and it says that the vast urban decay within the black community over the past 40 years has been for a large part responsible for the increase in prison, in the prison industrial complex, because it broke up the families. We have so many one-parent families. So, I know that there are abuses within the prison system itself, but those abuses and the abusers come out of the environment, and then they put on a uniform, and all of a sudden somebody expects them to act like a decent human being. They weren't acting like a decent human being before they went to work for the Department of Correction. So that's a problem within itself, and I just wanted to kind of address that, because people don't want certain folks to have medical care even in what's called a free society. They want to fight against Medicaid expansion. They don't want certain people to live. They want to pass what I call the unproductive eater's law. They just want you, when you can't work and produce, they want you to just die or go away or something. So it doesn't just start when a person gets to prison, because some of the same people that's working within the prison are out here doing some of the same things. So, it's a double-edged sword.
Which
is very true with the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration. That's an important issue. And I just want to say that we're actually dedicating this conference to the legacy of Michael Brown.
Oh, okay.
Just as the people in Ferguson stood up and said, it stops here. We're not going to take anymore. We stand here and bear witness to all the abuses of our families and loved ones in prison, and we say loudly and clearly that we ain't going to take it no more, and we're going to start dealing with these problems as a powerful group of people. That's why we're having this conference.
Speaking of the abuses, I think I forgot to mention a while ago that another one of the categories that we have on this 10 most wanted list are people who have been wrongfully confined for crimes that they did not commit, or they have had situations where charges were brought against them that should not have been brought because they were, you know, it didn't amount to what the crime that they was accused of committing. And, you know, my personal crusade is that my first priority is to try to help people get out of prison who shouldn't be there at all. My second priority is to try to attain humane treatment for people who are in prison if they have to be there. You know, I tell people all the time that the 36 years that I spent in prison, I committed the crimes that they accused me of. I felt I had my reasons for doing it, but I mean, society didn't agree with me. I never cried or complained one day about the time that I served or the sentence that I received. But my complaint was that this is not part of my sentence. These all of these other things that you have added on to this, that does not amount to what the judge sentenced me to. And these are the things that I feel that I shouldn't be subjected to, and I am not going to tolerate that while I'm here, whatever the consequences may be. I mean, I was fortunate because it's the other people who were paid prices that were far greater than mine for going against the prison administration or not being liked by the prison administration or just simply being a victim. They don't have to not like you. You could just, I mean, if you're vulnerable, you can become a victim. And I don't think none of that includes the sentence that was imposed upon you by the judge. So,
well, let me just mention the fact that Keith only had a sentence of 15 years when he went to prison at age 16. And he served an extra 21 years because he refused to lose his dignity and go along with the rules and regulations that would rob him of his dignity.
I want to remind our listeners that if you would like to make a comment or if you have a question, feel free to call us at 816-931-5534. I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about some of the services that I believe members of your organization provide to family members. I understand there's a program whereby family members can be taken to the prison for a visit with family members, and that those rides can be coordinated. Does anyone want to talk at all about that?
Well, one of our members, Audra McLeod, has a transportation service, but CURE itself does not provide services at all.
Okay.
We are an advocacy organization.
All right. I guess what struck me about that is, as part of the in looking at the issue globally, you know, the destruction of the family as a consequence of these high incarceration rates. One way to try to combat that and to push back against that in some kind of way that we have some control over is to try to maintain the family relationship throughout the period of incarceration so that when they come back there's a stronger support system for them.
I would like to briefly address that. The breakup of the family, the breakup of the community, the tearing apart of the neighborhoods, that's all deliberate. We can go back to the early 80s to mid 80s, 90s, when Congresswoman Maxine Waters and the Black Caucus did investigation into the United States government involved in drug trafficking. That's something that's the elephant in the room, and drugs are not illegal in the United States of America. They're big business, and so are prisons. Capitalist greed has given to this huge increase in people going to prison. The failure of schools, that's not just something that just happens. They didn't just happen to close 26 schools in Kansas City. To take young people and put them into an environment, such as the one that Keith is talking about, you put them in an environment where they're uncomfortable. People don't really want them there. They're going to be mistreated, but you do that deliberately. And then you have these huge dropout rates. Kansas City, I'm just talking about Kansas City because this is where we live, but, I mean, it's all over the United States of America. Dropout rates are steadily increasing. So the drugs are not going away. So if there really was a war on drugs, then why are we haven't won not one war. All these wars we have fought for these last 40 years, we haven't even won a battle. And so I think that's something that I really wanted to address because it is capitalist greed. It's profitable for prisons, and prisons are big business, and people invest in them. It's human trafficking.
I definitely agree with that.
I believe we have a caller. Are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air. What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is Johnny Guy, and I live in the inner city. I was wondering how much money the government gets for incarcerating each prisoner.
It is.
We don't know how much money.
$37 a day.
We don't know how much money that they get, but they claim that they spend $57 and some change. That's how much it costs to keep a prisoner locked up every day. We imagine that if they spend that much, they probably get twice that much.
But it's in the billions. The amount of that's taken out of our taxes, it's in the billions.
And you have to figure that they have 31,000 people confined in the Missouri Department of Corrections. But the total number of people that they have to provide services for is in the over 100,000 people, because a lot of these people are on probation and parole, and they have to have funds to provide various programs for them as well.
I've often wondered what would happen if, when a judge imposed a sentence, that he said, along with how many years they were to spend, he would calculate the cost to the taxpayers for this person to be incarcerated. I think people would look at long sentences in a very different way,
it's interesting, but that's actually available in Missouri now, that judges can look at that. It's they can look it up on a computer before passing sentence to see how much it's going to cost to give a certain sentence to someone.
Do they announce it to the public? To me, if the public really did the math and they saw someone going to prison for a long period of time for selling maybe some marijuana to the a confidential informant that they had known for 10 mm-hmm. years and had partied with for 10 years, and they saw that it was going to cost them $100,000 to do that, to put that person in prison, they might feel differently about it.
Based on right. In fact, we have one person in Missouri right now who's serving life without parole for a small amount of marijuana.
Right.
No violence ever committed in the crime or anything. And I based on statistics that they are giving now, which I have reason to suspect that they are not totally correct, it costs the state something like $87,000 to keep me locked up for that 36 years that I spent in prison. So there's an example right there.
Right.
And I'm sure it would cost a lot more in today's money.
Well, in 2012, Hedy, I'm looking at some stats that the Criminal Justice Task Force gave me. 3,300 inmates in Missouri prisons were serving terms of 50 years or longer. That was in 2012. 2,806 of them are lifers, and 954 of them are serving life without parole. So in Missouri, one in every nine people in prison is serving at least 50 years in prison.
Wow.
All right. Do you have any other comment, caller?
So what it sounds like is that we have a modern-day slavery system.
Well, that was the point of the book, Michelle, I'm sorry, I've forgotten her last
name.
Alexander. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Her book is very enlightening, and I think goes to what you've been talking about, just that this isn't accidental. For some people, it may be unconscious. I think a lot of people are just not really looking at the outcomes. They're just living in kind of a dream world.
Well, what the caller said is so true, because slavery is actually legal in prison. The 13th Amendment bans slavery except for people convicted of a crime.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
all the people in prison are actually slaves of the state.
Right.
And without outside monitoring, they're being treated like that.
Well, really, prisoners have, according to the law, have no rights other than, quote, adequate, end of quote, medical care. They have no... they can be subjected to any kind of search and seizure. There are no rights other than the right to against cruel and unusual punishment. But other rights are not there. I believe we have another caller. Are you there? No. Okay. All right. All right. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right.
I just wanted to point out that when we were talking about the families and the impact that incarceration has on family members, it is essential that, prisoners try to maintain a strong bond with their family members while they're incarcerated, because that's one of the crucial aspects of rehabilitation. The prison officials, they seem to be on a campaign to try to destroy any bond or any tie that you have with your family members while you are incarcerated, because they don't want you to have any kind of support system, and their emphasis is on trying to make you feel that you are isolated, completely helpless, and cut off from everyone in society, and that you are totally at our mercy. One of the opening comments on the flyer that we distributed for the conferences says, it talks about people who are related to people who are confined in prison being treated like they've committed a crime. you know, when they come up on visits and stuff, the guards, they talk to them harshly, and they make demeaning comments to them, and then you know,
they harass
the family members, and then if the family member protests or objects to the way they are being talked to or treated, or the prisoner, then they threaten to cut off their visit. They get in their face and they tell them, well, I can make arrangements and fix it so you can't even come up here to see them anymore and everything. And, you know, you don't want that to take place in your family. And I don't think people...
And then there's recriminations against the prisoner if the family member protests.
Exactly. He could be locked up, placed in the hole. They can, I mean, and the way they operate the system is that a guard can come and he can make any type of allegation against you. No investigation is conducted to confirm whether or not it's just automatically taken as true. Much the same way that, you know, people are treated out here on the streets when they're arrested by police officers. You know, they can construe any type of behavior you commit or you do, or any type of response that you make as a crime. You know, and then they now and once they do that, they've got authority to do whatever they want to. You know, they can beat you till you fall to your knees. They can pull out a taser, and they can tase you till you almost dead or till you die. They can just straight out execute you right out here with a firearm. You know,
are you looking at any legislation or other types of things to try to address this these kinds of issues?
We're trying.
One of the main things we've been pushing is to change the 85% law, because we've got about 9,000 people under that law from way back in 1984, and they have to serve 85% of their sentence before they can even be considered for parole. And you have people who were there for first-time offense as a teenager, and they're growing old in prison after decades. So that's one thing that we've been fighting. There's a lot of other things that have to be done legislatively, but we have to choose our battles because it's a long, hard road.
And this is why we need people out here in society to become involved in this, because we, every day more and more, everybody is being treated like we're prison. We're all being treated like we're in jail. This is where this mentality came from. If you let this type of insanity run free anywhere in society, whether it's behind the prison walls or not, eventually it's going to find its way out here into society. You know, you have people,
right,
people who think that I can just stay in my house and keep my door closed and I'll be okay. It's coming to your door, to your doorstep. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to be any escape from it. And this is what we're trying to stop. We don't want this to happen. We don't want this to take place anywhere.
Would you give us again the information about the conference this weekend, and if there's a number that people can call to get more information?
The conference will be held on September 27th. At St. Mark's Union Church, 1101 Euclid Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And if you need further information, you can contact me by calling 816-377-CURE. That's 2873. 816-377-2873. Or you can contact Miss Hetty Harden, at 877-5...
Wait just a minute. For some reason, that phone is not working right now.
Okay. Well, could you
but
give us
people
a phone?
Can call my home number, which is 314-863-8182.
And you can also email MissouriCure@hotmail.com, or you can email me personally at k8022476@yahoo.com.
Reverend Hosendorf, tell us, you're going to be the keynote speaker.
Yes.
And when will you be speaking, and what will be your topic?
I don't have a copy of the...
Okay, yeah. I have it.
Do you? Okay.
Okay, just a second here. The conference starts at 10. And the keynote speaker will be at 10:55.
Right. Okay. And what will you be talking with us about?
We're going to continue to develop this theme, of course, for Missouri Cure. But I'm also going to try and connect some dots, because lobbyists represent the capitalist greedy corporations that makes prisons profitable. They're on Wall Street. You can invest in them. And so I'm going to try and connect some dots. 9% of the students in Kansas City, Missouri are homeless. So,
students?
You know, 9%.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, our time has run out, and we didn't get to finish hearing what you would be covering for us. I'm sorry. All right. So in the afternoon, then, we'll have break out into smaller groups and have a variety of topics that they can attend and get more information about. So, again, thank you, all of you, for being here.
Also, lunch is provided.
Lunch is
provided.
All right. Thank you again so much for being here, and thank you, listeners, for your kind attention, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the 420 Drug War News.
Hey, white people.
What's up?
We're kids from Ferguson, Missouri.
You know, that little place where white police shot an unarmed black teen in the face. It was a national disgrace. So listen up.
Because we're here to talk to you
about race.
Sometimes white people are like, but is racism still a thing?
Spoiler alert.
Ooh, yeah.
Just because Beyonce is on your playlist
and you voted for Obama
doesn't mean that our generation
has seen the end of racist drama.
Racism is not one of those things.
So go away.
If you pretend it doesn't exist.
Like Crocs or Justin Bieber.
All this focus on race makes me uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable?
Try being black.
Fun fact.
When the NYPD stops white people,
they frisk only 8%.
When they stop black and Latinos, they frisk
85%. Oh! Ooh, what's that smell?
That would be racism.
We just want an equal shot in life.
Not to be shot to death.
It's you people who are making this about race.
I don't see color.
Really?
Did you know that employers
don't even need to see the color of our skin
for the discrimination to begin? Resumes with black sounding names.
Like Tamisha and Tyrone.
50% less likely
to be called in for a job interview.
In the exact same resume.
With white-sounding names. But is this injustice? Surprising.
When 40% are white.
Ask to say white people are more hardworking than black people.
You people are just playing the race card.
No one's playing cards. This is not a game.
Complain about this race card BS.
It's just an obvious choice.
Of criminalizing
and marginalizing people.
So stop.
Some of my best friends are black.
You get a cookie!
Here's a hot tip.
You're not really being a friend.
We try saying racism has reached its end.
Racism is not over, but I'm over racism.
The continued discrimination against black people.
Us white people, we have to erase it. And the first step is to own up and face it. In America, fighting for equal treatment
is not a black thing.
We all have to do our part.
Band together against racism.
Racism is not over, but I'm over racism.
Did you know that the rate of admission to prisons in New Jersey is 28 blacks for every white person? Same holds true for Maryland. In Maine, it's 36 blacks to every white person. In Minnesota, it's 39-1. In Wisconsin, it's 53 blacks to every white sent to prison. And of course, in Illinois, the nation's leader, it is 57 blacks admitted to prison for every white person. Seems that bigotry is not an exclusive realm of the South. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three.
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcast on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta music.
Try to understand. Don't make myself a fool.